Welcome to the... Thought it was Wednesday. Tuesday, May the 14th, edition of the Clemson Dubcast. If through the course of this you hear birds chirping, dogs barking, cars driving by, those are all real. Made the executive decision on a beautiful day such as this to conduct the opening of the podcast from my front porch. Normally, we record it from the darkness of my basement / office. And honestly, not sure what's taken me so long to do it from the front porch, especially with the weather like it is of late. LaVon Kirkland's familiar face is on the front page of TigerIllustrated.com. Plenty of recruiting information this time of year and insight from both Paul Strelo and the network of very distinguished recruiting analysts at Rivals.com. Chris Ard actually sat down with lengthy interview with Mike Farrell. Very interesting stuff there. So if you're listening to this and you are not subscribing to TigerIllustrated.com, never a better time than now to join the fun. Want to give a special shout out to the title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast. Since all the way back in the beginning, way back in August of 2018, Parham Smith and Argenthold Law Firm, downtown Greenville. Blake Smith, he's been a good friend of mine for years, dating to the days when he taught a law class at Clemson with some guy named Terry Don Phillips. Back in this past July, when I was sort of mulling over whether to do a podcast or not, just sort of tossing around the idea, thinking about possible sponsors, Blake and Brooke Archenhold were so enthusiastic to jump on board. So happy to have them with us then, and the same is true now. The forte of their firm, which is at 15 Washington Park in Greenville, is medical negligence. They represent patients and their families in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other personal injury litigation. Free consultations at Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm. So give them a call at 864-990-4581 or go to parhamlaw.com. that's parhamlaw.com. If you're a business owner in Clemson, Greenville, South Carolina, the Southeast, anywhere, you probably want to hear about Tandem Payment and what they have to offer. If your business accepts credit cards, you probably need to see what these guys are all about. Tandem Payment, based right here in the upstate, changing the face of payment processing, quickly becoming the most cost-effective solution for all small businesses. Tandem's program, which is based on applying a small customer service charge to each transaction, ends up saving your business up to 90% of previous processing charges. One of the owners of Tandem is a 2005 Clemson grad. Instead of entrusting the majority of your hard-earned money to someone over the phone, you can meet face-to-face with the Tandem representatives and their consultative approach. So give them a call at 864-672-1570 or online at tandempayment.com. All right, before we get started today with Bill King, want to let you know about a message from Gary Cohen, the general manager at the Abernathy Boutique Hotel over at Taps Bar and Cafe. They collect the old Taps yearbooks, and they don't have them all. They have quite a bit. They've done a really good job of collecting those. But Gary asked me to let the listeners know if some of y'all have some of those old yearbooks, give them a call at the Abernathy or go by there. And if you do have one that they do not have, they will give you some pretty sweet discounts on beverages and such over at the Taps Bar and Cafe. Phone number is 864-654-5299 or online at theabernathy.com. Okay, let's get started with the one and only Bill King. Bill King, we've had some requests to have you on over the past, 6 months we've been doing this podcast, so really glad that you can join us.
Fantastic. I appreciate it.
All right. What is your life like? Tell everybody what you're up to. You are with the Nashville radio station, and I guess how long has that been going on? The WLAC? I'm sorry, not right. WLAC, but
It was WLSU for about 13 years, but it's WNSR, which stands for Nashville Sports Radio. And I've been there, well, I don't really know how many years now, because I was exactly 10 years on Sirius XM. And then right after that, I went to Terrestrial again. So I've been here since, I believe, the beginning of 15, however many years that would be, 4 years, something like that.
Okay. And before we started recording this, you were saying that you got no script. You just sort of fly by the seat of your pants and let the show take, I guess, go in a direction that you know, that just let it go how it's going to go. Is that just
I really do. Yeah, I really do. Now, there are some days that, well, I'll have a few guests, but my show is not guest-driven per se. Mondays, we never have guests. I don't care what time of year it is. No guests on Monday. Usually one guest on Thursday, one on Friday. Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll have two or three guests. But usually, I will just hop on air and the show always takes off in its certain direction. Now we are college football oriented. So we've got a solar system to work with there, but we just kind of let it happen. And it's a lot of me obviously being the host, but a lot of Twitter interaction, which I really, that part of Twitter I love when it's during the show, a lot of really good interaction there. And we take a few calls. And a lot of talk about college football, a lot of talk about Clemson, Alabama, if Tennessee's ever going to come back, if Florida's on the way back, all that kind of stuff.
What are the hours of the show?
The hours are Eastern time, 7 until 10, 6 until 9. I'm on Central time in Nashville, but 7 until 10 Eastern.
What is your process? Okay, what time do you get up in the morning? Do you have a routine by which you prepare for a show? What's your process like?
You know what? It's odd, but I don't have to try. And let me explain what that means. My whole existence, my brain doesn't understand how to turn off my interest in college football. So I couldn't make myself not absorb college football every day. That's why on my show, we've got all these various things we go by. But one is, there is no off season. There's a playing portion of the season and there's a non-playing portion of the season. There's no off season. We don't treat it that way. My brain is as connected in the spring and summer as it is when the games play. I'm always reading. I don't even try. It's just I find myself doing it. I'm wired that way. It's robotic-like. So I don't really sit down and say, okay, tonight at 8, I better spend an hour on the show tomorrow. I'm all day long, whether I'm in the grocery store or picking up one of the kids or doing an errand, my brain is always in that world. It knows no better. So when it's time for the show to come on at 7 Eastern, Mike comes on and here we go. And that's basically what happens. So it's not one moment of preparation. I get up now. I've got a studio. I got a studio here. So I don't even go into town. I'm about 40. I'm in Franklin, which is south, and I don't even have to go into the studio. So I get up probably about 5:15 and we're on the air in about 45 minutes. It's not bad. Saves me about 2 hours of driving.
So did you, I presume that when you were with Sirius, you had the home studio as well, right?
No. What happened was, I got a call in 03. Was it 03? Yes. And, it was New York and they said, would you do a college football show? They basically said it won't work because it's not pro, but let's try it. Would you do it? And I laughed because they're so clueless. They don't know what they're talking about. And I knew it would work. And we discussed it over a few weeks and came to an agreement. So January of the new year, 04, we started the show. And it was in the remember back then it was Rivals. There was no 24/7 sports, and their corporate headquarters was in Franklin Brentwood, where I live, and they built me a studio there. So in the beginning days, that show actually was called Rivals Radio. And I'd go in there in the studio. They'd connect it up with New York City, and we'd do the show. And it would beam out to all the satellite radios everywhere. Now, what's interesting about that, Larry, is it wasn't Sirius XM at the time. They were competitors. That didn't happen until 07-ish, right in there. So it was just Sirius. And then about 3 years later, we got a call, and they merged with XM, and now our audience doubled because we got all that group, too. So, no, I was at the Rivals Radio Studios, where Rivals.com is located, in Brentwood, until a few years later, and then I ended up downtown on Broadway. I call it the Baby Space Needle, but it's that huge radio tower there connected to Bridgestone Arena. And I did the show from there about another 4 or 5 years.
It's interesting. You had a very specialized show on Sirius and Sirius XM, but typically, and I hope I'm not sounding ignorant here, typically on a radio show, like a Nashville radio show, things are more broad. Like you're talking about the local sports, like the Predators and all that, but you're still specialized. You only talk college football. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. My show's not local. It's located somewhere, but it's not local. It's college football. Now we'll get away a little bit, have fun with things. We have callers that we have fun with that really don't say anything that matters much about college football. They've got a team and they'll complain about their team or whatever, but it's not, I mean, we do college football. Obviously, recruiting is always part of it, at least from time to time it is. But we have fun with it. It's not today we're going to have a guest on and he's going to show you this new coverage in the secondary. You know, he's been looking out for this year. Well, I mean, we could do that. Chris Landry's with us on Thursdays. He handles that kind of stuff. But usually we just have fun with it. Yeah, and it's so, no, I don't talk Predators hockey. I don't talk Titans. I don't talk about whether or not Marcus Mariota's been a good quarterback. None of that. None of that happens on the show. Trevor Lawrence would get way more time on my show than Marcus Mariota would, whatever. And he's just about a freshman. He's just getting going.
Is that a reflection of what you think people are interested in, a reflection of what you are interested in, or a mix of both?
Probably a mix of both. Because my audience is a lot of the people from Sirius XM stream my show. They get, I mean, everything's, you know, I mean, communication is so good these days that people get my show and they stream it. They stream it live. So they're interacting during the show. So it's basically just like the Sirius XM show. You know, it's a little different because you change year to year. You're never the same person. But it's a big audience of people who stream the show. We're on about 10 affiliates, radio station affiliates. We've got a little bit down in Alabama. We've got several here. We've got a little bit in Kentucky. We've got 3 stations on the Emerald Coast down in Florida, Panama City, Pensacola, Destin, Fort Walton Beach. So we're on some stations in these areas, but the streaming audience is the big part of the show.
How has streaming changed the game in what you do?
Well, perfect timing coming out of Sirius Satellite after 10 years, because it used to be, I don't want to say taboo, because people have had the ability at radio stations to put out a stream, but people typically didn't use it. They weren't used to it. So it was kind of odd, and it took a while. But now it's normal. Podcasts are normal. Podcasts are mainstream. Streaming is mainstream. So, but 10, 15 years ago, well, let me put it this way. Before satellite radio, when something would happen, occasionally at a radio station, something, a bad storm comes through and they knock your tower off or something, we'd be off the air like Larry in 01, something would happen. I'd be in terrestrial radio. And the general manager would say, well, don't worry about it. Just keep talking because it's streaming. I said, no, I'm not doing it. Nobody's listening to that. So, you know, back then, I didn't believe in it. I don't think anybody else did. It was there, but it wasn't used. Now you can use it.
How did you get your start in radio? Was it like mid-80s or something?
Correct. It's a very weird story. My upbringing was never about broadcast. I never thought that's something you do. I never thought that's something that you would be interested in doing. It was never a dream. I never thought about it one moment of my life. I majored in biochemistry and got my degree in that. And I was going to go. I've got a family dental practice that my dad started years ago. And then I have a brother who is now in it. I was going to do the same thing. I got through college, took the DAT and the MCAT, and I was sitting out a year. Listen to this, LA. This is really weird. I was working at a kidney dialysis place, for lack of a better description, cleaning those artificial kidneys, because I thought that this will look good on the resume, man. I'm out here. I'm helping. You know, I'm going to go. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to be a physician or a dentist. And while I was sitting there doing this job and not hating it, just finding something to do with my life, I'm like 23 at the time, 22. The older guys in this lab would have on talk radio, which I never listened to. Really, talk radio wasn't much of a thing in the 80s, early 80s. And it was mainly politics. But I'd be sitting there late afternoon trying to finish up my work, and a sports show started. And it wasn't very good. Not that I was qualified to know it wasn't very good, but it just, you could just tell. And I remember just thinking, that's interesting. So Larry, about a month or two after that, I called the station just to have fun, to see if I could do an internship. And I went by and met a guy, and everything went well. Of course, I had no background at all in it, but he said, yeah, we'll get back to you. We'll figure this out. Of course, he never called me back. So about 6 months went by, and I called again, and then ended up helping a guy out on Saturdays, basically getting his coffee and, you know, going and getting his laundry. That was about it. It was a local TV guy, real famous TV guy. And Larry, let me just fast forward from that moment to where you and I are now. That's what happened. So it was not a dream.
You were getting his laundry.
Basically, I don't know if I remember getting his laundry, but that was the level of my working at a radio station and doing an internship. Back then, they treated microphones like they were gold. I mean, some new dude off the street ain't coming in here talking on the radio. So it took me probably 6 months before they'd let me even. Oh, and they told me in those days that I wouldn't be any good at it, and they told me my voice sucked and you probably had to go do something else. I was told that repeatedly.
And so then what was the catalyst in getting you first on the air and then with some momentum headed toward what you became?
Two things. You know, radio stations, they go through program directors left and right. And so some guy comes in and liked my work ethic because I was there, never got paid. And I hung out there and I did anything I could just to, and again, I still didn't know if this was going to be something I would do, but I was going to at least give it all I had and go extra, be there early, be there late, help anybody with whatever. And so he liked me. And so he put me on Saturdays. Let me have a Saturday show. That's no man's land. Saturday in May on an AM station, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, it's not like everybody's waiting for you to come on the air, right? So, but I didn't care. If he said 1 AM, I would have done it. And the other thing, Larry, is I had always been intrigued with recruiting and I'd always kept up with it, even though I never thought I would do anything with it. And I knew it would be a big thing. And so I immediately, when I got on the air with that knowledge, dominated it. And it drew me a big crowd immediately. Immediately. It was the timing, and I knew, and people at the station, other on-air people saying, don't talk about that stuff, man. Nobody likes it. It's not accurate. It's a very small part of what we do. Don't. I'm telling you, man, that's a turnoff. People hate that crap. Don't take it. It's dumb. And, of course, I'm a good non-listener. So I just accelerated it. So the other thing is, so the weekday show started using me because of that knowledge. And then I just became a co-host. But, and the audience, see, 1510 WLAC at night, because the show went 5 till 8, it's in about 26 states. So that was the Petri dish that got me to satellite and got me to where we are today. That was because having that knowledge, I had an audience all over at least half of America, that people who were into that. And it grew so fast. It grew. I mean, it was overnight.
And so this was what, like 87, 88?
88-ish, 89, 90. Yeah, I mean, I was probably, by 1990, I probably was a three-year veteran. Starting to figure things out a little bit. Yeah, late 80s, not mid-80s, but late 80s.
Okay, so you're talking recruiting. What are you reading? Are you bringing guests on to talk recruiting? What was the source of the knowledge that you were imparting? Because I'm guessing you weren't traveling around talking to prospects. You're reading some publications and such.
Well, yeah, and there weren't many. You had Max Enfinger and you had Tom Lemming. I think that's it. There might have been something else out there, but so I bought all those. I bought all the basketball ones too. And I would go to the library and search out every newspaper in there and go to the high school section because I knew who the players were, but I wanted data and I wanted info. So I'd go do that. And when you're the only guy doing it and you know you've got your hands on it and you know how popular it's going to be, it's easy. And yeah, I'd had Lemming on. I had Enfinger on for a while, but you could tell he was not good. You could tell he was not what he was made out to be. So we cut him off pretty quick. But Lemming would come on there in the early days, and then whatever services. The first big service was the one right before Rivals, the same group, Shannon Terry and that group, they owned that one too. And sold it pretty quick before they started Rivals up. But that hit in about the mid late 90s.
The name Mickey Plyler ring a bell to you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember Mick. Now he's in radio, right?
Yes. Yes. He hosts a morning show here on WCCP in the upstate in Clemson area. But, I had him on the podcast, I guess several months ago. And he was talking about dealing with you way back when. I don't remember the years, but I texted him this morning. I texted him this morning, telling him I was going to have you on the podcast. And he texts back. He said, "Ask about his beginnings with Bob Bell at WLAC, his old intern Trey, the UGA fan, his neighbors Vince Gill and Amy Grant."
Yeah, I had. We had everybody. Alan Jackson's down the road a little bit, and it's farmland. But it's in the Franklin area, but it's kind of getaway area. But it's nice. Yeah, Trey was an intern, big George fan. I've lost track of him. He lives here, and he never was trying to get in radio. He just hung out with us. He actually is in the funeral business, I believe. And yeah, Mickey, I got to know. I don't remember how I got to know him. But he was prominent over there in recruiting. I knew that. So we connected that way. And Mickey actually went with us to the 1996 SEC basketball tournament in New Orleans. And that was the year that Kentucky won it all, Patino. And they played Mississippi State in the SEC championship game finals, and they lost because of a guy named Dante Jones who played like Michael Jordan. But yeah, Mickey actually took that trip with us. Basketball trip, believe it or not.
I don't believe that. Yeah, I don't think he's out, no. I don't think he's been to a Clemson basketball game, home game, in maybe a decade or so.
Probably hadn't.
So Mickey had a recruiting newsletter that he was distributing.
Correct.
So I'm guessing he would come on your show to talk recruiting. I think that's what he was saying.
Yeah. He'd come on, and Clemson, you got to remember now, Clemson was not all that far removed from Danny Ford. So we would talk because Danny was, you know, Danny's been God forever, regardless. You know that. You live over there. But, and I knew a few of those assistant coaches back in the day of the Tommy West, Woody McCorvey, who's obviously with Dabo now, Brother Oliver, some of these guys. I knew these guys. So we would always reminisce about Clemson and what will it take to get them back. And, boy, we had that what will it take to get them back conversation. Seems like forever. But so we had lots to talk about. And again, Clemson was always very prominent in recruiting back then. Even if they weren't winning with them, they were always sexy in recruiting. So there was always something to talk about.
So how did you get to know these coaches like McCorvey and Brother Oliver and others?
Well, Woody, I'm sitting there. It's probably 1991, maybe 90-ish. I'm barely in the business. And I get a call in my office from the newsroom. And it says there's a coach on the news line that wants to talk to you. So I go down the hall, pick up the news line. It's Woody McCorvey. And he said, Bill, I listened to the show. He was down there at Alabama on Gene Stallings' staff. And he said, I appreciate the way that you handle the callers and the way you take up to the coaches. That's how the conversation started. So I've known him ever since. That was 91-ish, 90, 91, somewhere in there. And, of course, 92, then it won the national championship, Gene Stallings' does. So that was kind of an interesting time because that's when expansion hit and everybody said the SEC will never win another championship because you just expanded. It's going to make everybody beat each other up, which the opposite actually happened. But so, yeah, that's how I got to know him. Tommy West, gosh, Tommy was an assistant at Tennessee. Now, Tommy played at Tennessee and he's from Gainesville, Georgia. And when he was an assistant up there for Tennessee before he got hired to be the defensive coordinator at South Carolina, I got to know him there. So I get to know, once you get to know these coaches, as you know, you end up meeting a lot of them. Now, they don't all become guys you're always in touch with, but in some form or fashion, there's very few coaches, particularly, maybe not Pac-12, but let's say Oklahoma this way, Texas this way, very few assistant coaches that I'm not going to know somehow.
Is it harder now than then to develop a relationship with a coach, just given the, it seems like every program is like a fortress and, you know, they're trying to control the message and there just seems to be there's a much bigger wall there between, staffs and the media.
I'll tell you a funny story about that. Alabama's probably the biggest fortress out there. Meaning it's the Bill Belichick rule that Saban learned. One voice, right? One voice. Kevin Steele, everybody knows Kevin, is back at Alabama. And I had not talked to him in a few years. And Kevin was having a tough time about what happened there at the end of Clemson and the West Virginia game. But it's a couple of years after that. Kevin and I changed phone numbers. And I was getting my iPhones out of Atlanta, so I had a 404 number. And Kevin didn't have it. So he contacted somebody, I don't remember, he's trying to find it. And he's like Nick's right-hand man at Alabama. He's not on the field. He came back to be Nick's right-hand man in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. So I get a call from Kevin, and he said, Bill, man, I appreciate you. Because I sympathize with him a little bit. Dabo had to do what he had to do, and he made a hell of a hire. But Kevin was still down about this. You know, his reputation was sullied. He went out on a horrible note in that game. And so anyways, so Kevin and I kind of reestablished a relationship because we'd been out of touch. And what was funny is he'd say, you can't talk about this at all, Bill, because literally Nick will kill me.
Literally.
So we're not kidding. You know? So we'd be talking. Oh, I can't forget the very, remember they hired Lane Kiffin and everybody's jaw was open. And that very day I get a call from Kevin. He goes, Bill, we had our first coaches meeting today with Lane Kiffin in there. And he said, I looked over at him and said, I can't wait till we go back to Tennessee. so yeah, it's these guys, the young, and you got to remember, not, Larry, I know you run into this. The young guys, in a lot of cases, want to get to know you because it could help them somewhere down the road. Maybe not get them a job, but it always helps to get publicized. Always helps to be known. I'll have a lot of coaches contact me that way. Or you know, nowadays, Larry, people will DM you. They won't call you. They'll DM you.
And say what?
Well, hey, big fan of yours. Here's my number. Let's get together sometime. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Or sometimes they'll DM me and they want to talk about smoking brisket because we're always talking about barbecue and hanging out and all that kind of stuff. It's always something. I had a coach, he wouldn't want me to, because of this, he wouldn't want me to mention his name, but I had a coach DM me the night before, I believe it was the Derby, saying, "Bill, up here at the Derby, I'm up $3,500. It's basically the only thing that us coaches are allowed to bet on." And then he had a smiley face.
That's fantastic. Well, let's on the Kevin Steele topic, let's compare notes on what happened. I mean, you mentioned that West Virginia game. I've always been in the impression that it was more than that, that he and Dabo were just like oil and water. They just didn't really get along that well. And there was some strife before that debacle in the Orange Bowl. What's your take?
I have never had a conversation with him about what happened other than that game. Now, again, it doesn't mean there's not a lot more to it. It's just I personally have never had a conversation with him. I just know, and he never said a negative thing about Dabo to me. He was just hurt because he knew what he did to his reputation. It hurt him. Kevin likes what he does. He spent a lot of money being an assistant coach. And he had to step back and kind of hit reboot. And he was disappointed in himself. He's disappointed in what happened. He was disappointed in everything. And that's basically the conversation we had. It was, I don't recall him ever talking about another coach specifically at all.
Big supporter of Clemson Athletics and now a loyal supporter of the Clemson Dubcast is Harris Flooring America. Based in Anderson, South Carolina, Harris Flooring has been instrumental in a lot of the facilities transformation you've seen on Clemson's campus lately, from the Allen Reeves Center to the McFadden Building to Memorial Stadium to the Neary Center. Harris Flooring has been at the ground floor, pun intended, of all this. Family owned and operated since 1947. The owner, Scott Junkins, big Clemson guy. He employs Clemson folks. And keep in mind, it's not just commercial. Harris Flooring is just as good inside the home and the residential realm as they are with the larger scale commercial stuff. Floor-to-ceiling design capabilities, give them a call 864-642-6183 or online at flooringamerica-anderson.com. What is, you mentioned earlier at the beginning of this conversation, Clemson and Trevor Lawrence are moving the meter with your audience and your show. How much have things changed in terms of, you know, how much of a topic Clemson is, you know, the last 5 years compared to, say, 2009, 2010?
Right. Well, Clemson, after Danny Ford, was just basically in the recycle coaches business. And there'd be a little something that would happen to excite people, and then they'd get their dreams shattered. It happened over and over and over. So that was the constant conversation when talking about Clemson until Dabo got things going. But you got to remember, Alabama is, they're like the Yankees. People adopt Alabama left and right who have never been to Tuscaloosa. More people than not that adopt Alabama have never been there. They're not going to school there. They just love Alabama. They adopt them. And that's been going on forever now. That's not just a Nick Saban thing. That's been going on since Bear Bryant. It's a many-decade-old thing that goes on with Alabama. And Clemson has done the unpardonable. They've beaten them two out of the last three, and they destroyed them in the last one, which you're not supposed to do. So that right there, there's only one team right now you can mention with Alabama, and it's Clemson. And Clemson has been beating them. So that right there takes the conversation to another level. And then you have a freshman quarterback who is from East Tennessee originally, then moved down to Georgia. So that has always been brought up because Tennessee fans many years ago had this faint hope they could possibly get this kid, this eighth grade phenom kid back in the day, right? And now if he comes out as a freshman, if they'd let you, he'd be the first guy to take. And look what he just did once he got rolling with this Clemson offense in the passing game, et cetera. So, yeah, that conversation is one that we have all the time. And then, of course, you've got Nick Saban, who now is violently mad because I can tell you for sure, and I haven't talked to Nick, but I know people who do, he is obsessed after this. So he's crazed with getting this thing back right. So we've got some interesting days ahead of us.
You know, it's interesting just thinking back to some of the sort of moments that brought, I guess, similar reckoning for Saban in Alabama, right. Like, you know, the Cam Newton 2010, Johnny Manziel in 2012, and I guess maybe to a lesser extent, Ohio State, just in terms of, okay, here's the kryptonite, you know, that it's going to take to beat a Nick Saban defense, and it's whether it's a mobile quarterback or the hurry up, no huddle or whatever. What's interesting about the response to what happened in Santa Clara is that it doesn't seem to be a specific system or anything. It's just that Clemson is comprehensively on Alabama's level and maybe even past it, just given the wealth of talent they have. Do you see it that way?
Oh, in that game, boy, yeah. Now, I think those teams are relatively even. But I think one thing that happened is the DBs got exposed big time in that game, the Alabama DBs. They got out-athleted, they got outplayed, and that's nothing you can excuse. I mean, it just happened. Player on player, make a play. Boy, now, here's something. Danny Sheridan said the other day on Feinbaum that if they were to play today, I guess the rosters as they are, Alabama would be a 3-point favorite. Now, I'm not a gambling guy, meaning I don't know how they set odds, so I couldn't tell you why that is. But I think what we're hearing is they're relatively close. Obviously, Clemson's having maybe the best recruiting class ever, at least the beginnings of this class, ranked number one in the 20 group. Alabama's typically doing well again. LSU is too, all those times. Georgia's got a big lineman there in the state of Georgia. But, yeah, with a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson, but Trevor Lawrence now, and the receiving core they have, and the way they run, all the various things offensively, I mean, it seems like the playbook's unlimited for them right now.
What was your take on that matchup going in, and what was your take in the immediate aftermath?
Well, let's go back a little bit. The whole season, the comparison was 95 Nebraskan, because they averaged beating their opponents that year by 38 points. They had no come-to-Jesus moments. Every game was a rout, all the way to the Florida rout. And Alabama was beating their opponents like that all the way through. Now, towards the end is when Nick started getting a little skeptical. Towards the end of the regular season, let me say. And Nick started getting down. Nick did not like this staff. We kept hearing about all these new members and Nick loving them. That wasn't the case. All these guys that left pretty much got pushed out of the mix. And that's why he wanted 7 new coaches this year, 6 the year before. And Nick got mad because they got away from physicality. They became a we call it pretty boy ball, West Coast type ball. And it took away their soul, the Alabama football soul, and again, their ability to be physical. Now, they still were physical, but not by Alabama measurements. And Nick started feeling this late in the year, I think right after the LSU game, which was, as once it got going, pretty one-sided. But late Auburn game, even though they won, he didn't feel like they did well. Of course, they probably should have lost to Georgia again. But that's what he felt about this whole situation, and what angered him so bad is he felt like they lost their identity. And by the time they got to Clemson, a team that can match up with you, they simply didn't have it. Well, they just couldn't hang with them.
Yeah, and you know, Saban has said, or at least alluded to, that after that LSU game, that they lost their humility, you know, kind of got fat and happy. And right. If you're just looking at the scoreboard, you don't really see evidence of a team that right. is kind of wobbly, because they beat Mississippi State, I think it was 24-0. But if you watch that game and you saw Mississippi State's defense giving Alabama and Tua a lot of problems,
correct.
You came out of there with concerns. And then, of course, the first half against the Citadel, a lot of people wanted to write that off, including me. And then Georgia, you know, something I mentioned a few months ago, Alabama was on the verge of implosion in that game, right? And or actually, yeah. both of those games. I'm sorry, the game the year before in the national championship, right. Georgia had them at the precipice of implosion. They just weren't good enough, or whatever, didn't have the right play calling to do it. But Clemson had that ability to do it, and so yeah, it's really interesting looking back, because full disclosure, I thought going into the championship game, I was not optimistic about Clemson's chances. So I'm in that boat of the people who were dismissing all the problems. And then, of course, the second half against Oklahoma, when they looked totally undisciplined. You could see the signs. We should have been able to see the signs, and they're easy to see now, in hindsight, especially.
Well, I mean, during the season, they were told, I'm sure Nick hated it, how good they were. I mean, they can't avoid it by everybody. On our show, we quit calling them Alabama. It was the Death Star. That's all we, I mean, the entire time it was the Death Star. No more Alabama. And they look like they were going to duplicate that Nebraska 95 dominance. And you're right. Isn't it interesting? It's a good lesson. You can be winning. You can even be winning handily, and there's still a problem. Now, you got to be smart enough to understand it and not ruin anything, but isn't that interesting how that could work?
And interesting how, conversely, another team can use that in their favor and to fuel their motivational fire, because for several months, as Clemson is winning just as decisively as Alabama is, more so in some cases during the regular season, all they hear about is Alabama. Is this the best team ever?
Right.
And what do you think about that? Clemson's contention that they're definitely contention among their team,
right.
And as evidenced on the tombstone that they erected, I guess, a couple months ago, saying they're the best ever. Do they have a legit case for that, just given how much of a stir there was about Alabama being the best team ever?
Boy, when you get into best ever, I don't think that roster, and I like to break it down in different areas. I'm not sure I think that roster would be the best. Hellacious defensive line, hellacious roster. But again, we're comparing it with the best of the best of the best. I still think that the best teams I've seen in modern history would be the 95 Nebraska team, the 01 Miami team, and maybe the 04 Southern Cal team. Mm-hmm. Those are, now you're just talking about players and literally hundreds of them, it feels like. Those are some tough ones. We'll never know the answer. And Miami should have won it the next year. Of course, they got beat by Ohio State. A controversy, but they had by far the best roster in that game too, and didn't get it done. I think Clemson belongs right in there. I really do. To do that to Alabama, I wouldn't have said that before the Alabama game, but to have that game done basically halfway in is not anything I would have considered pregame. Matter of fact, if you were to say somebody's going to have the other team done, I would say Alabama's got them down 31-10 at half. It's over. That's the side I would have picked.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I said before the game, if Clemson wins, it's close. If it's a blowout, it's going to be Alabama doing the blowing out.
Right. Good thing I don't bet much.
Same here. Same here. Bill, do you get a lot of, I guess, the sentiment of, oh, this is just boring. This is getting old, this Alabama-Clemson thing. We need to expand the playoff to create more drama and to maybe give these two powerhouses another opportunity to slip up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get my share of that. The game is chalkier now than ever. It's always been chalky. There's always been a very finite number of teams that could win it. We've had a few outliers. Matter of fact, they came up on the show today. 84 BYU was an outlier. 1990 was a split with Colorado and Georgia Tech. That wasn't normal at the time. But for the most part, all these years are just these teams kind of recycling. But now it's just basically Alabama Clemson trading blows. It's not even four teams, really, because the other teams aren't winning it. Buckeyes won it in 14. That's about it, right? It's hard to do. Oklahoma's not playing well enough defensively yet to get past into a championship-type game. So it's Clemson, Alabama because of the most balance. But we were talking earlier. It's always been chalky. I was thinking about some of my early days as a kid getting the preseason magazines, when magazines were really more popular than they are now. And it was 1979, and I could not wait to get the magazines in the spring to see how they had teams ranked. And Alabama, Larry, during that period, 78, 79, they went back-to-back natties, just like they did in 11 and 12. Those were the last two for Bert Bryant. And it was real chalky then, too. It was Alabama. And 78, they split it with Southern Cal. It was a split vote in 78, outright in 79, Alabama. Now we did hit a little period there in 80. Georgia was a first-time champion. 81, Clemson was a first-time champion. 82, Penn State was a first-time champion. 83, Miami was a first-time champion. And 84, BYU. So we had a little stretch there where teams that weren't historic national title teams started winning it. But that's not happening these days. And, of course, Clemson's got a different resume today than they used to.
Well, I mean, chalky is one thing, but the fact that Alabama and Clemson are landslide favorites to meet in the national championship for the fourth time in 5 years, that's unlike anything that's ever happened, right?
Well, unless they change the rules, Trevor Lawrence isn't leaving after this next year either. So, and there's, let's say Tua goes after his junior year. His younger brother's already there, was there in spring practice. So, Talia Tagovailoa. So, And they're signing Johnny five-star running backs left and right, wide receivers, offensive linemen, D-line. I mean, they're doing what they're just replenishing the players with the same guys, basically. So it could be, I think you might just wouldn't probably make everybody else sick, but you could pretty much say the next 2 years looks this way.
Or more. Bill, what's your, I've been asking every guest recently, or most of the guests, in the next 5 years, what is your over-under on national championships for Clemson? I just need a number.
Boy. Okay, I have to set the over-under, is what you're saying.
Yes.
I'd set it at two. You're giving me 5 years. I'd set it at two.
Okay.
Probably.
Who is
Do you know how to pronounce... Do you know how to pronounce the kid from San Francisco? DJ Uiagalelei. I've been working on that.
Uiagalelei?
Correct.
I just stick with DJ.
I know. Or DJ U.
Yes.
Because, you know, I actually went to a video of him being interviewed, and the guy asked him how to pronounce it, and I spelled it out phonetically, and I have it on a sheet.
That's important for you, not as important for those of us who just have
Correct.
To type it.
Correct.
But typing it correctly is hard in its own right. Do you think Georgia is the most, I guess, legit contender to sort of break this stranglehold?
Yes. They recruit a phenomenal level of player. on both sides of the ball. They think they're going to have their best offensive line this year in modern history. They're stacked deep at running back. Receiver, not so much. Need a little replenishing there. Tight end, not so much. Defense has got plenty of talent. They have to get this weight off their shoulders, not being able to close. The Sugar Bowl means nothing. That didn't mean a thing. The Texas game meant nothing about what Georgia's capable of. There was no motivation to be good in that game. And Texas had all the motivation. Give them credit. But, Georgia's got to prove they can close it. They've got everything in place, though, personnel-wise, to do it. They really do. They just have to finish it. They're recruiting, as you know, because you're right there, and Clemson recruits the heck out of Georgia. Their recruiting is as good as ever. If not, maybe another notch.
The ACC Network will debut in August when Clemson plays host to Georgia Tech on a Thursday night. How much should the ACC be worried about the glaring lack of a legit challenger to Clemson, not just this year, but for the foreseeable years-long future?
Feels like Florida State in the 90s. That's what it feels like. Yep. Where it was Florida State and everybody else was pretending. So on some level, they were all pretending. That's what we're like. I mean, there's Clemson, and then there's a gap. Frankly, and I know because of divisions, Pitt got in. The next best team in that league was Syracuse last year. They proved it. They proved it against Clemson. And I know Lawrence got kicked out, got hurt, and was out of the game. But it's a very poor league right now. Mack Brown's picking it up in recruiting at North Carolina. I believe they're ranked number 10 right now. Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech has got them ranked, I think, 15th or 16th. So they're taking on a whole culture change there, obviously, Paul Johnson. Louisville's got new leadership. So we're seeing the next wave, but I would say for the next probably 2 years, it's Clemson in and around. Hey, Virginia Tech's not right. They're not what they ought to be under Justin Fuente, other than that first year when they played in the ACC championship game. They've fallen back. So as far as the ACC Network, we got to understand, everything revolves around football. All the other programming is inventory to stock the shelves with, but it's football. And it's weak. Now, obviously, ACC is more popular than SEC basketball, so you're going to get more out of that than we would over here. But it's a weak league right now, and Clemson. The only way Clemson is in a tough game is if they're bored, basically, is where we're at right now.
I mean, the whole model of a conference network is built on, or I guess the hope of the ACC's network is built on the SEC example. Back in 2014, right. You had, everybody in the entire SEC footprint was calling their cable providers, asking them to, or right, demanding that they carry the SEC network. How many schools in the ACC footprint are their fans going to be demanding that they carry the ACC network? Do you see that as a pretty big problem?
No. Might be. I've gone through this. I went through it with the Big Ten. When the Big Ten got started with their network, and of course, they have faded badly. I don't even program it anymore. It's so bad. It used to be pretty good. But when they first got started, remember, Delaney was first to market with this, not the SEC.
Yep.
And I had Delaney on the show, and they were panicking. They couldn't get deals done with the cable carriers. It was real messy. And in the beginning, it went really slow. It picked up some. Probably peaked out about 4 or 5 years ago now. It's almost out of sight, out of mind. So I've been through this. And here's the other thing. I don't know if Clemson fans want to hear this, but Clemson's more of an SEC team than an ACC team. And so obviously Clemson fans are going to be saying, where am I finding this? I got to have it. Florida State fans will too, even though they're beat down pretty good right now, because they realize that Willie Taggart might be a catastrophe of a hire. The first year indicates he was. We'll see what happens with another year. Miami's not right. They haven't been right since they joined the league. who else you got? The basketball schools on Tobacco Road aren't going to do it for football. I mean, their fans aren't. Maybe they'll have a few of them. They'll do it. Duke and North Carolina will do it for basketball, Virginia. Hokie fans are pretty passionate. They're mad right now. They will. Hokie fans will support this. But what did I just name? A couple?
Yeah, I mean,
Louisville's pretty passionate. I think Louisville fans will too.
Well, you just said, you know, Clemson fans will be, you know, very interested in
correct.
It. But that's the thing. The SEC has like, what, 9 or 10 of those similar ravenous fan bases? And the ACC has none?
Seriously. Everybody but Vandy football, they probably have maybe 20,000 of their own fans at any game, maybe less than that. And the other fans are the other team. Most of the time when Vanderbilt plays at home, the other team has more people at Dudley Field than they do. That's not just Tennessee game or whatever, Alabama. That's any game. So, but here's one that's under Kentucky basketball fans are rabid football fans. They just have never had the history until this last year when they had their best season since 1977. Kentucky fans, they'll hunt down the SEC network for football.
Yeah.
That's a very underrated note there. They're crazy passionate.
Agreed. It's very underrated, their football interest. They just need a reason to follow. Bill, is there anything we haven't talked about that by the way, do you watch your fall Saturdays? You sit at home? Or do you go to games at all?
No. I have to literally, I need to be aware of pretty much everything. So it is really, it'd be horrible for me to be stuck at one game. In the past, when we were at Sirius, they'd send us to a league championship game. Either, heck, one year they sent me out and I was at the Oklahoma-Missouri game doing my show. That was not good. But anyway, so yeah, I was out in Kansas City doing my show from that game. But SEC games, national championship games, but since I'm not with Sirius anymore, I don't go to any of them because I need to be in front of all of this. And I need to have everything set up to where I can see all the games. And if I'm stuck in one spot, I can't do what I do because, again, I'm not a beat writer. I'm a talk show guy who's got to be ready Monday morning. So I can't miss anything. Yeah. And I don't want to come back and on Sunday not know what the hell happened and I'm struggling to catch up.
So you got several TVs on, computers, and then you're recording games you'll watch, I guess, Sunday maybe?
Correct. I tell everybody, they're talking about NFL Sunday. What I do on Sunday is I redo Saturday. That's what I do.
Yep. I do that some as well. What a great game. We're very fortunate to have earned a living off of it. Bill King.
That's absolutely right.
I enjoy coming on your show from time to time, and it's been great to have you on the Clemson Dubcast. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Larry. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks to Bill King for taking almost an hour out of his time to visit with us and give some insight. Thank you to our title sponsor, Parham Smith and Arts and Hull Law Firm in downtown Greenville. Also in Greenville, Tandem Payment. Over yonder in Anderson is Harris Flooring America. And then right here, smack dab in Clemson, smack dab right over about a block from the football stadium is the Abernathy Boutique Hotel. Thanks to all of our sponsors for their generous support and loyalty. Most of all, thank you all for your loyalty in listening to this podcast on a weekly basis. We are going to try to have another one later this week to make up for the absence of one 2 weeks ago. Still don't have this week's second one firmed up yet, so we shall see. But I'm optimistic as I sit here on my front porch on a Tuesday afternoon. Everybody take care. Have a great week. Cheers.